The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
I want to start today with three little vignettes that were important for me in my life. And the first one was when I was a relatively new Zen student. I was living at a Zen center, San Francisco Zen Center. And it was back in the 1970s, and there were not very many Zen masters in the United States at that time. But they decided to have a meeting among themselves, a gathering to talk about whatever they had in common or issues they had or something. And so they gathered for, I think, 2 or 3 days and had these private meetings among themselves. But then one evening, they offered to be available as a panel to maybe take questions from the students who lived there, and students who were taking care of them and hosting them and all that. So that was nice. And so I was in the audience, and they were all kind of on a laid out. They were all kind of sitting behind these long tables, the 7 or 9 of them. And it was kind of, for me, as a young and impressionable, it was a pretty formidable group of teachers sitting there. But I was watching them, and at some point someone came along to give them tea or water, each of them, and maybe came with a tray or something, and came up from behind them like a good server, I guess, and kind of reached over and put the cup they had in front of them so they had something to drink. And they all kind of were kind of just accepted it. There was no, the Zen teachers had no, they just received it and was there. They didn't react or respond to receiving it at all, except for one. And one of them, when the server came to offer it, turned completely around to the server, acknowledged the server was there, and thanked the person who brought it. And the contrast between the ones who kind of just like, you know, were almost like oblivious, the person offering, and the one who took the time to really, like, that person was the most important person at that moment. And so the teacher was going to turn and really be there and see and recognize and thank the person. I was so impressed by that. Oh, that is quite something. What are the other people doing? I thought. So that inspired me. So that was one vignette. The other vignette was in the same Zen center some years later. There was a visiting monk from Japan who we were sitting at Sesshin, a 7-day retreat, and he was sitting next to me in the hall. And the way that it worked then is that every afternoon during the retreat, in the meditation hall, we would be sitting like I'm sitting up here on the stage. There would be kind of sitting and facing the middle of the room. Everyone's around the edges of the room. And people would come in and offer us tea and a cookie. But the first day of the retreat, first afternoon, they also came with a tray of cups, and each of us kept our own cup next to our seat for the week. At the end of the retreat, we were all supposed to, they came in to gather the cups we've been using. So they gave us tea, they gave us a cookie, and when that was finished, they came to collect all the used cups we've been used for a week. So the visiting Japanese monk who was sitting next to me, you know, it's all choreographed in Zen. You're supposed to, exactly when you're supposed to bow and chant and stand up and sit down. It's all kind of like, you know, choreographed on a schedule. So if someone does something that's a little bit out of the usual, it stands out. So we were, he was sitting next to me, and his cup was on the platform in front of him. And before the server came, he bowed to the cup. And that, wow. That's respecting, appreciating, having gratitude for the cup. I don't know what he was expressing, but I think I thought it was kind of partly gratitude, but the fact that you would express this to a cup, that was inspiring as well. Not just people that you'd respect, not just people you would thank or express something, but to a cup. So that was the second vignette. The third was when I was in graduate school. I was studying religious studies, Buddhist studies at the religious studies department. But I took a class from the history department. I think the class was something like the history of Japanese Buddhism, maybe. It had to do with Japanese history. And so somehow we were learning all these facts about history. And there was some little fact that was told. And we were preparing for the finals or something. And so I said to the professor, so this particular thing is not so important, right? That we have to know this. And he looked at me and he said, Gil, everything is important. And I thought, wow, that was quite something. Everything is important. So there's this idea that, you know, at least when you're studying history, everything has its value. But it kind of echoed in my mind all kinds of situations. Everything is important. Everything is respect-worthy. So I think what they have in common, these three stories, is the idea of respect. And respect is a very important attitude, behavior that in many societies, many religions, many people. I have never heard a Dharma talk about respect. I've been listening to Dharma talks for almost 50 years, and I've never heard one about respect. I've never seen anybody actually writing about respect. There must be someone, but I haven't, not that well written, read, you know, so. But if you go back to look at the teachings of the Buddha, the concept of respect is all over. It's kind of like sprinkled in all over. However, it's not on any list. So if you're going to like to teach lists, it's not there. It's not described as having any role for the path of awakening, because that's very specific, a kind of listing of practices and mental experiences that happen on that path. But respect is not listed there. So the things that that people often use for Dharma talks, they're talking about, you know, important things, things that are important. You know, in the suttas, things that stand out, the things you'd read in Introduction to Buddhism book, and there it is, you know, this is what it's all about or something. And respect doesn't rise to the surface high enough to be talked about in Introduction to Buddhism texts, you know, or Buddhism Dharma talks and all kinds of places that I've heard. Maybe some of you heard it differently. However, it's sprinkled in all over. And the impression I have is that respect was just an assumed important quality, maybe of society at the time of the Buddha, but just assumed as a very important quality people have, that you didn't have to teach it specially. You just mentioned it. And in fact, it gets mentioned in all kinds of places. One place is that it's mentioned together with gratitude and contentment. And I think also something that I've been translating to English is deference. Respect, deference, contentment, and gratitude are great treasures or great blessings in the Mangala Sutta. And in the Discourse on Loving Kindness, there's an emphasis on respect. And one of the wonderful teachings about it, where it's connected to, the idea of respect is connected directly with love, pia, the love or charity or appreciation or deep regard for other things. And then it's also connected with social cohesion, non-dispute, concord, and unity. So those wonderful things are all connected somehow in association with respect. And the Buddha teaches six things. Four things that are conducive to this love, respect, cohesion, non-dispute, concord, and unity. And these are loving kindness or friendliness, kindness, that if we live a life of kindness, then that conduces to love and respect. Generosity, if we live a life that's generous, that also is conducive to love and respect and so forth. And if we live an ethical life, that also is conducive to love and respect. And finally, developing the insight that leads to awakening, liberating insight. Having that insight, having that maybe experience of liberation, that also, or being on the path of that, also is conducive to love and respect. And so I think when you meet someone who is very mature in the Dharma practice, it tends to kind of bring up a certain level of respect, that appreciation of that person. There's a fascinating story of the Buddha. Soon after he was enlightened, he said to himself that someone will live an unpleasant life or an uncomfortable life if they don't have respect and deference and a certain kind of reliance on others. And so it's an interesting idea. So then he looked around and he said, well, actually, there's no one who is more realized than I am. So it doesn't make sense for me to have respect and deference or to rely on them, to have certain kind of dependence on them, because, you know, I'm complete in my awakening. So what should I have respect for then, if it's not a person? And he said, I'll have respect for the Dharma by which I was awakened. I will have, he actually said, respect, homage or honoring, and reliance. So the idea of respect, honoring, and reliance, not a person, but the Dharma, the teachings, the truth, the processes of awakening that exist within each of us. So here also the idea of respect appears. So respect is a fascinating social attitude. It's complicated because it means so many different things in English when we use the word respect. And sometimes it has, you know, it's more to do with fear than it does, you know, then it's not really respect. But we might say, you know, I have respect for something, but we're saying I fear it. But as an attitude of appreciation of others, an attitude of valuing another person, seeing their worth or their importance. Everything's important, including each person. And so to have appreciation for the value of others, when there's respect, it's a very interesting mental kind of process to do respect. To have respect, as many of you know, involves seeing again, taking a deeper look at what's going on. There's a Latin respect, like spectator or spectacle or something. To look, and then to re, it means again, to look again. So if something is respect-worthy, we want to take a deeper look at it. But a deeper look is also a deeper listening. Like this thing is, whatever who this person is worthy of me paying attention to. It's not only about me, myself, and mine. It's not only about what I want or what I'm afraid of or how it supports my self-centeredness or something. There's a kind of a dropping of self-centeredness, dropping of my likes, my preferences, in order to hear or listen or take in the other person in a good way. There is a kind of a healthy, I think, deference to others when you have respect. There's a putting yourself aside slightly in order to take in, to let the person, to register the person, to make space for the person, to there's a kind of deference. Even just to listen to someone, what they have to say, is a kind of deference. We put aside me, myself, and mine a little bit. So respect involves a kind of attitude where other people are important enough that we do kind of put ourselves, some part of ourselves aside. And it has to do, the focus becomes on the person, the object that we have respect for. But it's not a giving up of oneself, because at the same time, when we have respect for someone else, we're the agent of the respect. We're the one who's empowering the respect. We're the one who's living their respect. And so it comes from a place of certain kind of confidence, certain kind, hopefully, certain kind of ability to offer something here. So ourselves as the subject of the respect, as the person who has respect, part of who we are is put aside, our preferences and our likes, our self-centeredness, so we can take in and really register the other person. But part of us comes forward, the ability to do that, and the ability to appreciate somebody else, to value them. And this is a mental movement. This is not just a casual thing, just kind of stumbling along and, bumped into someone. It takes really a certain kind of stopping and taking in and registering and having a kind of mental process that values, appreciates and values the person that we're with. That you wouldn't get that message that that's important when people... Our Dharma teachers, for example, teach about some of the higher reaches of Dharma practice, where they talk about not self. You're supposed to, everything, self disappears completely. Or sometimes they talk about no separate self, and some idea of merging or disappearing of the self and the other person. Respect doesn't involve that. Respect involves a very clear distinction between you as the subject and the person as the object for that respect. And the advantage of that is that there's a synthesis of that, or the chemistry of that. There's something beautiful that can happen. There can be love. There can be respect. There can be appreciation. There can be a dropping of certain kind of self-centeredness, a dropping of self-preoccupation, and the strengthening of a kind of confidence. I would like to propose that healthy respect involves a healthy confidence. To offer respect and have no confidence, the respect might be more of a belittling of oneself, making oneself small in relationship to the other person, almost like subservient sometimes. But I think that the more confident we are in ourselves, the more value there is in our respect. The more we belittle ourselves, the less power or less energy or oomph there is in the respect itself. So does respect have a role in Buddhist practice? And apparently it does. It's kind of, at least for the Buddha, maybe it's so fundamental he doesn't have to say it's part of Buddhist practice. It's just assumed as a foundation. And I find that having respect for my teachers was very important for me. There was a time where I felt like I'm not really going to study with that teacher anymore. But I still had tremendous respect and deference to them. If some of my teachers told me, I gave my teachers this authority over me. I said, if they ever come to me and say, "Gil, you have to stop teaching," I would have said, "Okay." There was a few people who would, if they told me that, I wouldn't question it. I would say, "Okay," because I had that respect and that reliance, that dependence on them that felt important for me to have, so that I wasn't just being barreling ahead with my own, self-centered orientation around all this, and there was someone who was I was accountable to, or that someone that I was willing to listen to and hear from. But even more significant for me is the respect I have for the Dharma, for the practice. That it also is not, and the Dharma, the practice, and also karma. I've learned through my life experiences that these are powerful forces in the human heart, human mind. and that are not related to, that are kind of non-personal, but how I personally live affects it. So it's connected to the personal, but it's somehow bigger than, or it's a larger process too. And so for me, trusting the Dharma or trusting meditation or respecting it is to respect this process or this force or natural processes that that are valuable and important and profound, that I get out of the way for. If I respect my meditation, respect my Dharma, it's here also I put aside my preferences and my likes and dislikes, what I want, in order to allow make room for something deeper to happen. To allow for myself to listen and hear and sort of see something that's happening here that is different than me, myself, and mine. And I've seen this over and over again, this transformation, you know, this movement, this change that happens in meditation, where sometimes it's only in meditation I realize I've been spending the last hours somehow caught up in my thoughts or caught up in some personal concern, and then to watch and see it melt away or drop away, or to be able to meditation see through it to the other, kind of from the other side of it. There's more going on here than what I was allowing myself to tap into when I was going around my life to caring for things. So to have this respect for that process, respect for meditation, respect for Dharma. So when we show up to meditate, there is a kind of both putting ourselves aside and a kind of bringing ourselves forward at the same time. Putting ourselves aside because it's not about me, myself, and mine only. It's not about my, I keep saying, my likes and dislikes, my preferences, what I want. So that's putting that aside. But it's also about coming forward more fully because I'm here to listen. I'm here to really wake up and see. To allow life to show itself, allow myself to receive, allow myself to be impacted by the Dharma. The Dharma's operating here. Let me show up and be available for it. And so this wonderful combination and this dance between letting go of self and bringing self into the picture that I think is expressed very well with the word respect. At least the way I'm talking about it today. and perhaps there's a wonderful place for respect in our Dharma practice. And maybe Dharma practice has a different kind of confidence in it and a kind of freedom in it when respect is brought along and bear on it. And so maybe you have thought about this a lot, but maybe if those of you who haven't, maybe it's well worth some kind of deeper reflection about your relationship to respect, in what way for you does respect involve valuing what you respect? What kind of valuing? What does it mean to see something as worthy? And what if everything is important? What if every teacup is to be respected? What if everyone who run into is someone who warrants respect? What would we like to live that way? Respecting everyone. And who would benefit the most from that? You or those people being respected? It'd be nice if it was equal for both. So So respect that doesn't diminish us, it certainly doesn't diminish us, but a respect that brings forth some of the best qualities of who we are, that is conducive to love, cohesion, non-dispute, concord, and unity. What a nice thing. So those are my thoughts for today. So do you have any things you'd like to say about respect, thoughts about it? And when you, so where's, yeah, if you can bring it to you. And then if you can please say your name and then...
Hi, my name is Barry. I was thinking about mutual respect, that is maybe the substrate of connection. Mutual.
Mutual respect, yes.
Yes. And that feeling respected by another makes it easier to respect them and vice versa. I was thinking about your story about talking to your teachers in a respectful manner, respecting their opinions, and I was imagining that they were respecting you too as a student.
Yes, thank you, yes. So here.
Good morning, my name is Jill, and I'm sitting here with two thoughts that are struggling to come out as one question, and I can't quite get there. And the first thought is perhaps there's no teaching, actual teaching of respect in the sutras. Could it possibly be a matter of translation? I know we struggle with so many words. Maybe there's some little nugget in there that didn't quite make it to English translation. That combined with the fact that the word respect in our Western culture has so much baggage with it. When I was raised, the phrase, it always was used with the word show. You are to show respect. And showing respect is very different than what we've spoken of today. So somehow I'm kind of rolling through those two things together, which may mean that we just don't have a common language about it yet.
Yeah, I think that's very nice what you're saying, that the word respect is so complicated because of all the different meanings of it. And there's like a whole slew of meanings, and so some of them are not so healthy. And showing respect, if it's only a show, that's why I was calling it an attitude at the beginning rather than a show. But whether it's an issue of translation, I don't know. I mean, it's hard, very hard to know how properly to translate these words. There's a bunch of words which are closely related that sometimes appear in lists. And in English, they get translated as respect, reverence, veneration, and homage. So that's the family that we're talking about. Exactly what it means in the different ones. And also there's the word that's sometimes translated as deference is sometimes can also mean something like being a gentle. So things like that. What's interesting about how often they translate as deference is if you read modern psychology or philosophy about respect, deference is often considered closely related, kind of goes along with it. And so when I first saw that, I had, what, deference? That doesn't seem like a good thing. But I think maybe it is a good thing in a certain way, or it can be a good thing. And so all these things, part of the task is to discover how to do these things not as a duty and obligation, but how to do them in a way that's healthy, that's supportive and beneficial. And that's the task of each person. And that's what I think how mindfulness can help give us the inner information we need in order to understand when we're doing things in a healthy way and when not in a healthy way. So there's one more thing where respect appears in the suttas. And it's another thing. So I said the respect is kind of, maybe it's just assumed, maybe because it's a cultural value of the time of the Buddha. So he doesn't really teach it specially. another thing that's also found has the same thing, very foundational, and he doesn't teach about it particularly. And so it tends to be overlooked very often in the suttas, or gets mistranslated. And that's, I've taught about it now a number of times, anukampa, which I translate as care. Sometimes it's translated as compassion, but compassion requires someone to suffer, technically, in a dictionary definition. So there has to be suffering for there to be compassion, or some reference to suffering, and wanting to alleviate that suffering. But care can be involved with, can involve a caring for people who aren't suffering. And the caregiving emotion the Buddha uses repeatedly is this word anukampa. Karuna, the common Buddhist word for compassion, the Buddha never uses as a caregiving emotion in his teachings. It's always this anukampa. And so, but then the question is, what motivates anukampa? What motivates care? And there's very little said about this, but when there is a couple of places where there's disgust, it's motivated by respect. By respect, reverence, veneration, and homage in one place. In another place, just respect. And so these two fundamental things, respect and care, are hooked together. And then we care for people not because we have compassion for them or love for them. We care for them because we have respect. And maybe respect is a kind of a more universal or more foundational or broader or more, you know, it's like it, love and compassion is wonderful and profound, but it does require a more active engagement. Maybe respect is more basic. And we can respect people that we don't love. We can respect people we don't have compassion for. That our care of each other comes from respect is seems to be one of the teachings of the Buddha. So I don't know if that was addressing your two thoughts, but that was
very helpful. Thank you so much.
Hi, this is Shani. I think you were just starting to get to my question, but I'm also struggling a little bit with what I perceive as the different definitions of respect. I can understand kind of care as an attitude and towards maybe everything and not worrying so much about what the object is. But for respect, it seems with some of the words you're saying, like deference or, you know, veneration or these words, it seems like there's a positive connotation towards the object. So if there's, a difficult person or a violent person or things I really don't agree with, how would you approach respect in those situations?
Some people say what you do is you separate out their behavior from the person. And so someone who's difficult, maybe even dangerous, it's possible to respect their humanity, but not their behavior. And the behavior has to be addressed in a particular way. But you never lose sight of the respect for that person. So the person feels all along, you just called the police on them. but boy, that person did it in such a respectful way. He told me they were going to call the police. This is not really good, and I wish you well, but, you know, I would like to support you, but this can't continue. So I'll call the police. But I'll stay here while the police come and make sure they treat you well. Something, I don't know. I don't know, you know, just making up a scenario. But I like to believe that we can find a way to have respect for the humanity of people that's not dependent on their behavior.
Thank you.
Hi, everyone. My name is Jan. What came to my mind was also, since Barry and I have been leading the Sangha group after the talks, how much I respect the Sangha and have learned from the Sangha. No matter how long people have been practicing, it seems like there's always something to value and learn about what someone is experiencing through the practice. And also, I was thinking about something related to this from a talk that Tanisara gave recently on the climate crisis about how consumerism really comes from a feeling of disconnection and not feeling like we belong to each other, and how important it is to value and respect our connection to others. In addition, you know, to the Dharma and the teachings of the Buddha.
Nice. And this connection to others is related to the way in which self-respect and respecting others are connected to each other. And, you know, just respecting the humanity of others is you know, that's one way of talking about it. But another way of talking about it is that if you have self-respect, you wouldn't want to have any disrespect for anyone else. Because the act of disrespect is a way of diminishing oneself. So, of course you'll have respect because if you have self-respect, because that's what you're left with, is respect for others. Because to not appreciate others is somehow, I see it not as a neutrality, but as a kind of a movement of disrespect. So what else? Anything else?
I'm Tanya, and yes, I was just kind of imagining, you know, how the Buddha often defines things by their opposite. So I was thinking, I didn't find the word disrespect very visually, imaginally helpful for me, but I was thinking about the word respect or relook, and that to respect or relook, right? And the opposite of that is to not look, to not see, to not regard, to not take in. And how that's very painful, and that's sort of like the climate crisis, not looking, not seeing, not respecting. So,
what comes to mind is that if you're calm and present for things, of course you'll take another look. And so not looking is a kind of disregard. Not looking is a kind of turning away. And maybe respect involves, means we never turn away or never turn our back on someone or on the planet. Okay. So I hope this was nice for you. And I've never given a talk on this topic, but lately I've been... it's been on my mind, my heart, quite a bit, and I kind of find it kind of meaningful to spend time reflecting on this topic, and so maybe you will too. So thank you all very much.